This is Beyond the Uniform with TJ Brasser.
Welcome into another episode of Beyond the Uniform Special Edition. I'm your host, TJ Brasser, and I'm joined today by 2016 Olympian in synchronized swimming and two-time USA Synchro Athlete of the Year, Anita Alvarez. Anita, thank you for joining the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
All right, so just a reminder to everyone in case you guys missed the last episode. So Special Edition, I'm qualifying some of the episodes because last season and a lot of this season are still a lot of track and field. But I wanted to spread the love. I wanted to get all these other stories from all these other Olympic athletes because there's so many people that have so many great stories. So I wanted to spread the love, and so I'm qualifying those with Special Edition. And last time was a swimmer, Ryan Murphy, and now we're keeping it in the pool, but we're doing a little different swimming, with synchronized swimming with Anita. And that, Anita, that kind of leads me to my first question. It has been called synchronized swimming, but in 2017, the name was changed to artistic swimming. Why is that?
So it's kind of like a crazy thing. No one really does a sport for their whole life, and all of a sudden, like, they have to call it something different. So it's been really strange for all of us to just trying to adjust. Like, every time someone asks us what we do, we're like, artistic swimming. And then we kind of have to explain the whole thing because most people know it as synchronized swimming. I'm not really sure, honestly, why they changed it. I know FINA, which is like head of all the aquatic sports, originally made the name change. I think to kind of, the sport has evolved and changed so much over the years from where it started. So just trying to go along with that and, you know, help the viewers understand, help, you know, the general public understand the sport a little bit more. It's not as much like everything synchronized through the whole routine anymore. There are a bunch of different like peel offs or different things you can do. So people were getting confused, like, well, it's not very synchronized. Or there's also a solo event, so people are like, well, who are you synchronized with? So I think artistic swimming kind of like just like that next step in the evolution of our sport. So it's definitely hard to adjust and adapt to that, but I'm starting to get it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're not the only one struggling to adapt to it. So I might refer to it as synchro a few times. So I apologize.
I might too. It's okay.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. But so, I mean, with synchro or artistic swimming, there's a lot of different like aspects in it. There's this, like you mentioned, solo, there's duets, there's teams, but within those there's technical styles and then there's freestyles. What's the like difference between those?
Yeah, so it's kind of similar, like if you know figure skating, they have like their short program or their long program. So same for us, our technical routines are like shorter and they're a bunch of required elements. So every country will do those same elements in the same order. And then the rest of the routine is kind of free for you to choreograph, but at the same time, you can't do any like opposing movements or like the peel-offs like I was talking about. You have to be completely synchronized, facing the same direction, lifting the same arm, everything the whole time. So that's the technical routine, a little bit more boring. Most people will say than like the free routine, which is completely free to any choreography that you'd like, any music. And there's a time length for that also, but it's a little bit longer than the tech. So yeah, we have like the technical team, technical duet, technical solo, and then you have the free team, free duet, free solo. So definitely adds more routines in there, but
And so you mentioned one of the, I guess, like ways to do it is solo. And I mean, I was thinking maybe that's one of the reasons they changed it from synchro to artistic, because there isn't anyone to synchronize with if you're by yourself. That being said, so like in a solo, when you're by yourself, like what are you focused on then?
So I competed the solo for USA at this past World Championships last summer. That was my first World Championships competing in the solo event. But a lot of people will say like, oh, you synchronize with the music, which is like true. You have to interpret the music and kind of like create your choreography based off of that. You don't just like make a whole routine and then randomly like just play any music and like go to it. And it's also more about like you're by yourself, so you can kind of push your limits a little bit more. You can do different choreography, different moves. That's a little bit more unique, a little bit harder to say synchronize with a duet partner or with a team of eight. So you definitely like ramp up the difficulty a bit in terms of like the moves you're doing. And of course, focused on like even when it is the free routine, you're still focused on the technical side of it. So how high you can get out of the water, how many spins, how straight your spins can be, kind of all of that. And then, yeah.
Now, when you talk about the music, I mean, there's a lot of like gymnastic elements in synchronized or in artistic swimming, but there's also like kind of like an element of a dance to it as well. And dancers have a lot of like cues with the music that they're listening to when they're dancing. Can you hear the music underwater?
Yeah. So we actually have underwater speakers. A lot of people don't know that, but sometimes it's easier to hear underwater actually than it is above water.
Really?
Yeah. So it's really cool. They have underwater speakers. And so when we're upside down, when you're doing a duet or a team, you usually put the music to count. So similar to dancers, we'll do that also. So we're just counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8 over and over and over again. And every little tiny movement has a specific count that you move to. So that's basically how we synchronize, I guess, the routines. Mm-hmm. And then for solo, I think it really depends on soloists. I don't like to count when I'm by myself. I'm like really like to listen to the music and like understand the different beats. And if there are words, like I know I do this move on the word, like I don't have to synchronize with anyone. So it's okay. So yeah, definitely hearing the music underwater helps a lot. And then the speakers above water are super loud also. So,
So you're saying how, like when you're in a duet or something like that, you're counting as like some of your cues, but what are some of the other cues, whether it's you're with a team or when you're doing a solo, like what are some of the cues that you use?
Well, I guess like, yeah, the counts that I said, when we have like, we have to face directions, and actually in competition, we're not allowed to wear goggles. So we have to open our eyes underwater and above water, and like be focused on which wall we're facing. There are a lot of times when you're younger, kind of growing up in the sport, and you'll run into like a smaller meet, you'll come up facing the complete opposite direction, and you're like facing your teammate, and you're like, oh, wrong way. Now, of course, that can't really happen as much, even though maybe it does sometimes, but especially when we're like, we do lots of spins or just kind of moving really fast. And sometimes you get lost in the walls, especially if the routine is a little bit more new and you don't have that body muscle memory yet. We have to focus on the walls. So sometimes there are lines on the bottom of the pool, which makes it easier because you know, like, okay, this is deep and shallow, like this direction, not this direction. But then sometimes they like don't have lines, or they have lines going both ways, and it completely throws us off. So we just have to be like super focused on like, okay, deep and shallow, and like as we're turning to kind of know where we are in the pool and where we are in relation to our teammates too.
Now, I did not know you couldn't wear goggles. So how long does like that take you to get used to opening your eyes underwater without goggles?
I guess like it's kind of just something that is like the sport, so we're used to it. They make you do it from a young age, and I think as you get older you get more used to it, and like it's not as big of a deal anymore. But definitely when you're younger, you're like, you come up and the kids are always rubbing their eyes and like not opening their eyes when they come up, and like it hurts and complaining and whatever. As we get older we still complain, but yeah, it's just like it's part of the job, and we know we have to do it. So usually like a few months or a few weeks leading up to the competition, we'll have to start practicing without goggles. So we'll usually practice with goggles for a long time. And then as we get closer to the meet, it's like we'll train with them. But then when we go to doing our full swims during practice, during training, we have to take our goggles off or have them off for like half of the swims that we're going to do. And then you can put them on for one. And sometimes we like go home and like can't open our eyes. And we're like, this isn't safe to be driving the chlorine, but...
That's awesome. Okay, so now one thing I saw that you've done recently that I thought was really cool was you got to teach John Legend some artistic swimming for a segment on The Voice. How did that come about?
Yeah, so that was really awesome. So basically because NBC or The Voice is on NBC, and you know there's the NBC Olympics, so they wanted to kind of collaborate and start promoting the Olympics through the show. So they had each of the coaches or judges, I guess, pick a sport that they wanted to learn. So John Legend had just learned how to swim like a year ago. And then he's like, hey, I'm going to learn artistic swimming. So they flew us down there. We were down in LA like in February, I think, and just kind of spent a day with him and the whole crew and kind of filmed. this whole part and taught him some stuff on land. Then we got in the shallow end and did it with him. And then we moved over to the deep end and did it. So it was really awesome. And, you know, coming from a sport that's not as well known and kind of on the rise right now, it was great to get that exposure. And yeah. And then of course, with everything that happened with COVID and everything, they had to go to online calls or online shows for the last few episodes for the live show. So they invited me on for the live show, the live finale, to kind of just as they played the everything they filmed, and then to kind of like check in with the coaches. So yeah, that was pretty cool. Definitely a unique situation, and yeah, but it was awesome. It was really cool for us.
That's really cool. That's really cool that that it wasn't like, okay, we're going to have you do artistic swimming. Like, he was like, no, I want to do this. Like, he picked that. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And especially after just learning how to swim a year ago, he told us that. We're like, what?
So how was he as a student then?
He was pretty good. You know, he's a very, like, mellow guy and very, like, friendly and everything. And we were surprised. Like, he was trying to just get his legs up for, like, into a handstand in the shallow end, and he couldn't get his legs up, and we were like waiting for him to come up and breathe, and he was like staying under there forever. And then he comes up, he's like, oh yeah, it's those singer lungs. And we're like, oh, that makes sense. So he could stay underwater for a while. He couldn't really like get his legs up that well, but
that's really funny. So you guys are like pretty much best friends now, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Go over for dinner some nights and casual.
Perfect. Absolutely. Okay. So you started synchro at a super young age. You started, I believe, at the age of like 5, but you've done pretty much every sport you can think of in the water. Like, you've done it at some point. What was it about synchro that kept you with synchro over the other ones?
Yeah, I've been like asked this question a lot, and sometimes I like think back to it and like, I don't really know what made me choose it, but I got into sport when I was really young, 5. My mom did the sport growing up, so it's kind of just like natural that I was on the pool deck as she was coaching, and then just that I started it so young. So I did tons of other sports, not just in the water, but land sports also growing up. And once it got to that point of kind of I need to choose and take one path versus doing everything, yeah, they let me choose, and my parents didn't force me into doing the sport. Even though she did it, it was really up to me. So that was really cool, and I think that's part of the reason why I'm still here today. And I don't know, I think it was just like intuition. Like, my gut knew what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be and which one I loved most, and I just kind of like ran with it. So there's nothing that like really specifically. Also, I like to say that like it's a combination of so many different sports and activities and things, and I loved like kind of having like the best of both worlds, or like the best of 10 worlds, I guess, into one. I did gymnastics and dance and swimming and softball and soccer and field hockey. I don't know, like all these random sports growing up. But it's kind of like, you know, you have the athleticism in there, and you have to be strong, but you also have to be flexible and graceful and more like gymnastics moves, acrobatics. So yeah, just kind of like the combination of everything, I think I really liked.
Well, I mean, you are an Olympian and one of the best in the world, so I would say it worked out pretty well.
I think so, too. I think I made the right choice.
I agree. Now, you mentioned your mom was a synchronized swimmer and also coached for a really long time. And when a lot of parents, like when they've been involved in a sport for so long, some parents will be like super want to coach their kids and want to do that. And others want to just be a parent and kind of like sit back and just kind of watch. What was that dynamic like with you and your mom?
I don't know, like, I don't really know what she wanted to do. I like was kind of stubborn growing up, and like, I didn't like when she coached me that much. But it kind of worked out. Like, she was coaching the older girls when I was younger. And then as soon as I moved up to like the 13 and overs, she moved down to help like the younger program. And then I moved across country at 16 to be up to train with the national team. So, yeah, she was kind of always there, and it was nice to have her because she understood the sport. She understood what it takes to be in the sport, to train, to compete, everything that goes into it. But then she also had like that mother's eye when she would watch, and, you know, it could have been the worst swim of my life, and she would have still been like crying and thought it was amazing. So, I thought it was like the perfect little combination of both, that we had in our relationship, and she's still coaching today, at the club team back home. So she's still involved, and sometimes she'll travel to competitions with them and I'll get to see her. And so, yeah, it's really cool and definitely thankful that I kind of was brought into the sport because of her. And yeah.
What kind of advantage do you think that gave you growing up having someone at home that was so knowledgeable about everything you were learning?
I think kind of what I said, like when I was younger, you know, she was coaching a collegiate program and then also the club team. So I literally would just spend like my days on the pool deck, watching her coach, watching her athletes. We'd be like traveling and the athletes, I would like hang out or like want to sit with one of the, my favorite like athletes that she coached. So, or they would babysit my brother and I. So, just kind of like being there and being able to kind of like watch from the side. And I feel like at a young age, I had like the, I don't know, I was able to like watch and like understand what was going on. So I was able to like learn what kind of athlete I wanted to be from that young age, like just watching, you know, the different athletes that my mom would coach and, oh, like maybe don't like walk it, stroll into practice really late, or like, oh, she works really hard. Like all these things that you don't think a little kid is picking up on, but I think I really did. And, yeah, it just helps not just learning about that sport, but as being what kind of athlete I wanted to be in general. So, yeah, I think I learned a lot from that.
Now you mentioned you're from New York and you moved across country to be when you were 16 to be on the senior national team. How difficult was that move?
It was pretty difficult at first. I think I moved like my junior year of high school. So yeah, I was 16 and, you know, it's not just like one state over. It's literally from Buffalo, New York to the San Francisco Bay Area of California, which are like completely different cities. And, the whole environment, everything's different. And besides that being different, the training was like, I was going from going to school for 6 to 7 hours and then going to practice for 2.5. And now it was like, I wake up and go to practice for 6 to 8 hours. And then I go home and have to try and like teach myself high school online. So it was a totally like, you know, flip from what I was doing before. So, yeah. And of course just being homesick, and when you're going through training, you're exhausted and all these things. And then I'm trying to like having to like take care of myself in a way. I lived with host families at first. So, that was nice, 'cause you know, I would eat meals with them and feel like I had somewhat of like a family and home life. But yeah, I remember being like only gone for a month and being like so homesick. And now I haven't been home since Christmas of 2018. And I'm like, I miss my family, but like, it's fine. You know, this is like home to me here. And yeah, but yeah, definitely hard at first, especially when all my friends were like, you know, in high school and everything. Now I'm kind of at the age where everyone's off doing their own thing. So it's more like normal, I guess, to feel away.
But now, when you make a move like that, obviously a goal is to do that, to be an Olympian. And you succeeded in that in 2016 when you made the Olympic team to go to Rio. What was that moment like when you finally made that team and kind of everything you've been working for was kind of realized?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I don't think I was planning to like make an Olympic team that young. So I was 19 at my first Olympics and was selected for like the Olympic duet squad or the Olympic duet, when I was still 18. And, originally, like growing up, I planned like, okay, I get through high school, graduate, maybe go compete collegiately. And then like maybe before that, make some like younger national teams, 13, 15 or junior national teams, go to college and then come back and try and go to the Olympics. And now it's like everything flipped around. And, yeah, so I definitely wasn't like planning that from the beginning. But I mean, it was just like a dream come true. And I was just taking it all in, really. My duet partner, it was her second Olympics. So she was in London. So she was kind of able to help me through the process, any questions I had, or like kind of help me feel like I knew what was coming, I guess, before preparing for the games. And yeah, I mean, it was just a dream come true. And I was really just like living in the moment, kind of like taking it all in, no real pressure or expectations that I had. So yeah, it was a great first experience.
Now, the Olympics aren't something that's a stranger to your family. Your grandpa was an off-ice official for hockey in the 1980 Winter Olympics during the Miracle on Ice when the U.S. beat the four-time defending gold medalist Soviet Union. What kind of stories did he tell you from that?
I honestly wish I had asked him more about this when I was younger. He passed away now, so now it's just kind of like stories that I'm hearing from my parents or from my grandma. I think my dad's always been a huge sports guy, and our family in general has always been huge into watching the Olympics. So I think he asked him a lot, like, because he was so interested in that. And so I've been able to kind of like get little things from him here and there. But yeah, just kind of having that connection within the family and, you know, everyone, we've always all sat down and watched the Olympics throughout the year. So growing up, I was always watching them. And the one that I really remember, like, kind of getting that like Olympic dream, was the Beijing Olympics in 08. And that's kind of where it all started. And then I started getting more interested in like what my grandpa had done and yeah, all of that. So, definitely cool that I have that family connection.
Now, I mean, when you get to the Olympics, like obviously you're there to compete. You're there for like a job per se, but at the same time, it's so busy. Like there's so many things going on. When you finally kind of had that moment to just kind of take a step back and like revel in the moment that like you're in the Olympics, like what was that like?
I feel like, okay, so I had a few of those. The first one was like when we very first time we walked into on the pool deck, and it was just for like training for practice days. But it was so interesting because I had been in that stadium in that pool like two or three times for competitions before. It wasn't a new stadium or anything like that. But I remember like walking in and just seeing like all the different banners, like all the Olympic rings hanging everywhere. I remember just walking in and like just kind of like freezing, and like my coach and my teammate just kind of kept walking, kept talking about the practice, and I was like ready to like cry or something. I didn't know. I was like, this is like a completely different feeling, and I felt like I'd never been in that stadium before. So that was like the first realization, I guess. And then after that, you know, you're in competition mode, and I don't really realize until like right before we're about to compete for the very first time, I was like in the ready room, which is where we have to like meet to the people check you in and everything like that before we walk out. And I just remember like seeing some of my synchro idols that I had growing up that I watched on YouTube sitting across from me, like about to compete with them. And I was like, this is not real. And yeah, that was another like realization moment. And then I think afterwards, like, I didn't realize it until I got home, because you're kind of like absorbed in this, like this bubble. It's like another world, another planet that you're in for however many weeks that you're there. And, you know, you're living in this athlete village, and you wake up and you go and you have all these options for meals. And then you go and walk forever to get on this huge bus that takes you right to like the door where you have to enter. And there's a security, and like everything is so surreal. And then you get home and I'm like, ah, like this is the regular life. Okay. I remember now. Or like, okay, now I realize like what was happening, you know, for those past few weeks. So, yeah, definitely just a crazy experience and totally surreal, the whole thing.
Now, you guys placed 9th at the Rio Games, and that was a jump up three spots from 12th, which is where the U.S. previously was. And your partner at the time, Mariah Korolyova, talked about how huge of a jump that is. And so, and people might think like, well, yeah, but you didn't medal or stuff like this, but everything's relative. Like, when relating it to like swimming or track and field, it's like, yeah, 0.3 seconds is a blink of an eye. Like it's nothing. But then if someone drops 0.3 seconds in the 100-meter sprint or in swimming or something like that, like that's a huge drop. So Right. Everything's kind of relative. So why is it so difficult to move up? And why is 3 spots such a huge jump?
Yeah. So it's really hard to move up in our sport. Of course, it's a judged sport. It can be subjective at times, and you really have to be like a great amount better than your competitors to move up like just one spot sometimes. And usually you don't see like a change in the placements or a big jump in just 1 year. Usually it'll be like built over time. So you'll have to keep like a team together training to really prove themselves, prove to the judges that they deserve that. So, yeah, they got that in 2012. And then actually the year before, we had world championships in 2015, where Maria and I swam together. And again, I think we ended 12th, so 12th or 11th. So just from 1 year earlier, we had jumped up so much. And even throughout the 2016 season, when we were competing, we weren't ahead of a lot of those countries that we pulled ahead of in Rio. So it was super exciting for us. We weren't expecting that at all. We were expecting like to improve our scores, to have like look at how our swim was and kind of compare it to our personal bests and things like that. And so when we actually got those scores and saw our ranking, it was like completely shocked. And then I realized like, then you look back at all the work you did and everything that you put in and how it's all worth it and everything. So it was a really exciting jump for us in 1 year.
And so you talk about like how much better you have to be than another team to make a jump like that. What is it that separates like those top two or three teams from the next three or four teams below them?
For like the Olympic Games, the technical routine and the free routine that we talked about earlier, they're combined. So part of your technical score actually goes into like your overall score. So you swim your tech and your free routine. And then for finals, if you make it to finals, you re-swim the free routine. So the technical routine, you keep that score and that's kind of like goes into your final. Definitely the technical part and like the required elements that you're swimming makes a huge impact on your overall score. And it kind of changes, like every country can have their unique strengths and things like that. So some countries like Japan are extremely technical, like their technique is amazing and their sharpness and their like, their unity, their soldier like movements is really like amazing. But then countries like Ukraine, who's also up there, is very artistic and has amazing routines and choreography, things like that, and are also very good technically, don't get me wrong, but like over Japan, they have more artistic side in their choreography. So kind of every country different, and kind of you want to take what your strengths are and amplify that to try and pull ahead of the other countries. And
now the U.S. hasn't medaled in Olympics since Athens in 2004. What do you think it'll take to get back on the medal stand?
It's a hard question to answer, but I think just consistency in kind of training, competing the team. Usually we have a lot of like turnover within the athletes, within the coaches in our program, especially in the past like decade or so, with some college programs, people will go off and go take their scholarships and go train there. And for our sport, you can't really do both. You need to like choose either national team path or collegiate path. And you can do both eventually, but not at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's not like some other sports. I think track and field and swimming, I know like you can compete at your college and then make an Olympic team. Mm-hmm. But of course we have to train together all year round. So it doesn't always work like that for us. So just trying to like keep a core group of girls together to be able to be seen on the international stage and like show that we're persistent and that we're still going. We're determined to kind of like move up the ranks. And so I've been here since fall of 2013 competing. So I'm kind of hoping to like keep that push and grab some more people along with me to kind of keep going.
You went with a duet in 2016, but the U.S. hasn't sent like a whole team since 2008. But I've heard a lot of things and seen a lot of things that a lot of people think like this could be the year that the U.S. sends a team back to the Olympic Games. What is it about this team that everyone has so much faith in?
Yeah, so we haven't had a team qualify since the 2008 Games. And there used to be only 8 qualifying spots, and it was continental, and then there were 3 final wildcard spots for everyone who hasn't qualified yet to qualify. So now they've added 2 more spots for the team, so there are 10. And all the other spots have been taken, and now we have to go to the qualifier, which is now the first week of March of 2021. And that's where all the other teams fight for the final 3 qualifying spots. So this is like, I mean, if you look at like world championship results, Italy and Spain, I think, are the 2 that'll like pretty clear that they'll take those first 2 spots. So it's really just this final 1 spot. And we're fighting with, I think, 4 countries. This is like the first time I think that's ever been 4 countries fighting for 1 final spot. So it's going to be crazy. And I think now that we have this extra year, our team is super young. Like I think you mentioned earlier, we have a new coach, Andrea Fuentes, who comes from Spain. She's very well known around the world in our sport. And we have a young team of athletes. I'm the oldest and I'm 23, which is like pretty young for our sport. So, yeah, this extra year is really all we need. Everyone's been saying, you just need more time. You need more time to get kind of the recognition and appreciation of, you know, your work, your choreography and everything you're doing. So now that we have an extra year to train with this team, I think it just increases our chances even more. And yeah, so hopefully we'll see. We're in this fight. We start in a couple of weeks and then we're going until the qualifier, which is early March. So.
Now, I mean, I know you've been on the senior national team for a long time, but you said like you're the oldest, like you're the vet and you're 23. Like, what's that like to be the vet at 23 years old, which is not old?
Yeah, it's really weird. I grew up kind of always being like the younger one on the teams. I think on my club team, you know, we didn't have like so many people to fill the team, so they would always move up younger ones. So I was always swimming up in age groups. And then when I started, I was training on the junior national team and I was one of the youngest. And then when I joined the senior team, one of the youngest. And then all of a sudden, just after Rio, or no, after 2017, I guess, all of a sudden, like I had this new group of teammates and all of a sudden I was like the grandma of the team. And I was like, whoa, this is so weird. Like, I didn't know like how to act and like how to be. And then I kind of like flipped the switch. I was like, okay, I need to be like a leader in some way now. And, you know, I'm the returning one. So I know kind of none of them have been to world championships yet, to Pan American Games, to the Olympics. So, yeah, it's definitely a weird shift just because my whole life I've been kind of the younger one on the team. And it's fun. I like it. I don't know, something different and kind of getting to use my experience and help the other girls on the team and, you know, still learning from them too and using their young energy to kind of keep pushing me too. So it's been a good combination, I think.
Now, you'd mentioned like you guys train like 8 to 10 hours a day for 6 days a week. Like, it's a job, and that's on top of so many girls are still taking high school classes and stuff like that. But for all that training, like, what does your training consist of each day?
So it changes a bit throughout the season. We'll do a lot of cross training. So we'll do like ballet and Pilates. We'll do gymnastics for our strength training. We'll do like regular, we call it speed swimming. I know everyone else just calls it regular swimming, but speed swimming workouts. We'll do different types of land, like training. We'll do running, preseason, things like that. We've done weights in the past. We do boxing. We do a bunch of different things. And especially during this quarantine, we've tried like so many different things just to see, like, to be able to create like the perfect training plan for us leading into the Tokyo Games. So it's been interesting. And that's another thing people don't realize is kind of like, you know, we don't just get in the pool, do our routines and leave. Like, it's so many different aspects that go into it. And then once we get closer to competition, it's a little bit more like, okay, we still do our land, like strength and flexibility training. But then it's majority of it will be in the pool doing our regular synchro training. It's kind of different. We usually go like either 7 to 3, or we'll do like 7 to 1 and then come back and go like 5 to 9. it's like normal for me now, but I guess it's, it's a little bit crazy. But it's kind of like school, like you're going from subject to subject. So it goes by fast sometimes.
You're just training at an insane level. Besides that, identical to school.
Yeah.
For you, like, how is it different? Because you have your duet as well as the team routine. So how is training different for you and your partner than it is for, than it might be for some of the other girls?
So kind of what I said about like split practices or like having some more practices. This past year, we would come in sometimes in the evenings to practice again, because we still have to train with the team, and then we have to add on a little bit extra sometimes to come in and train just the duet, or sometimes we'll split during practice and we'll be working on duet while they're fixing things in the team, and then we just kind of always have to catch up. So we always have to ask the teammates, there's some of them that will always report back to us, or when we get home, send us videos of like the changes they made or reminders that we need to know or catch up on. And so it's kind of our responsibility to do a little extra, or if we don't have extra hours to train, sometimes we don't have more pool time, then to be able to, yeah, catch up with our teammates and make sure we're getting all the information we need and that. And then with solo, I've had to do a little bit extra also, just going in like extra time if I find pool space, and being able to train kind of separately outside of the team practice, because team and duet, of course, are priority being Olympic events. So solo is a little bit of an extra thing, and also to, it's good to have to participate in all the events that like world championships and stuff. So trying to kind of be in as many events as we can, it's good for our country and trying to rise up in our sport also. So
now, is there a solo in Olympics as well, or is it only duet and team?
Yeah, so Olympics is just team and duet.
Okay.
And then, so only two events, only two medals in our sport for the whole Olympic Games. Yeah.
Really? Crazy. I did not know that.
Because they combine the tech and the free event. So you, there's a gold, silver, bronze for team, and then gold, silver, bronze for duet, and that's it. Which is like crazy compared to some other sport, like track and field or swimming. Again, it's like so many medals or different events and things like that. Yeah, so that's just team and duet. And then for world championships, they have solo, they have combo and highlight, which are other like group programs. And then they have the mixed duet.
Okay.
Like the male, also can do it.
So when you talk about like training and all kind of your like dry land training and stuff like that, I would think that one of the things that you kind of have to focus on strength wise most is your core, because there's so, you're using that so much in the pool. What kind of things do you guys train? I mean, you mentioned some of them earlier, but what kind of things do you do in dry land training to strengthen what you need to strengthen for swimming?
Yeah, we kind of do. I mean, really, we do full body. Of course, core is extremely important in everything we do. Every move we do, we have to make sure to stabilize our core so that we're not getting injured, especially when we're doing like crazy flexible things at the same time and super fast. Like with all the back flexibility we do, we have to compensate and have our core tight. But then also like we're doing the egg beater. So when we're our face up out of the water and like our legs are working underwater, so our legs need to be extremely strong. And then also when our legs are up and our head's underwater, we're sculling using our arms to get high. So it's really full body, everything we do. And you know, all the different like positions and like weird movements we have to do, like you really have to like get all those little tiny muscles. So that's where I think like Pilates has really helped us a lot, because it's like all those little tiny muscles you don't think you have, you'll work and it seems like you're not doing much, but then the next day you're like in sore in all these weird places. So we've done that. We've done like weights and things like that over the years. We're not doing that right now. We're doing more of like a gymnastics-based strength training. So we work with a gymnastics coach who's actually Andrea's husband, who was an Olympic gymnast for Spain. So convenient. and there we do like, you know, we do anything from like isometric type, like holding positions for strength. We do more circuit for like cardio and our legs and stuff like that. So it's pretty like well-rounded with everything we do actually. And then we'll do like our ballet strength, which is like extremely difficult, but like in a more like slow, like, I don't know, different kind of way, I guess.
When you're talking about like all the things you guys have to do in the water and you're so close, like when you're practicing, like, is there a lot of like accidentally like beating each other up in the water?
Oh yeah. I have like, so we have to swim with our patterns. We call them patterns, like in the team event, super close together. So over, like if you watched routines from the past, patterns were a little bit wider. You would like line up on a line in the pool, but now it's like, you want to be as close as possible. And that's probably one of the hardest things, because you're trying to like egg beater super high and like do these nice arms, but you're like kicking each other at the same time or trying to avoid someone else's legs. So you're like, sometimes you'll just be going and like, poof, like get like kicked down by someone like on accident, but like you just like hit each other and then you like sink for a second. But yeah, you definitely like, I have scratches, like scars all the way up my legs just from like people scratching. We're every day, we're like, cut your nails. But yeah. And just like bruises and everything like that from kicking each other. And when you're upside down too, like sometimes people will be upside down while other people are like head up. So like their legs are like egg beatering and your head's like underwater. So you're like trying to avoid getting kicked by their legs. So it's definitely just, yeah, another one of those things you have to get used to and just kind of accept that you're going to get beat up and just like, okay.
Now, when you mentioned being upside down, I mean, like, there's a lot of times you guys are underwater and have to hold your breath. And I would assume, like, a way to train that is just a lot of cardio. But, I mean, you mentioned, like, even John Legend, he said, like, all the singing lungs that he had because he was able to hold his breath for really long. How do you train yourself to hold your breath for such a long time?
Yeah, that's another thing that's just, like, over the years. Like, you kind of just – you train it from a young age. So, like, you're doing your laps and then you go into, like, swimming underwater, laps underwater. And it's like that first time you make a full lap underwater as a kid is like a huge stepping stone. And then it's like, okay, you never like miss an under after that. And then as you get older, like we incorporate them into our workouts. So we'll do like different hypoxia swimming sets where you're like sprinting, but then you have to do a sprint underwater and then you have to climb out and do burpees and then go. And, you know, so it's like just getting more creative with it, I guess. And doing different sets where you're not just like sitting underwater, like timing yourself holding it, but like actually moving at the same time. Cause in our routines, we're holding our breath for however many seconds at a time, but we're not just like sitting there doing nothing. You know, it's like running, like jogging a mile and holding your breath for part of it. So yeah, it's just kind of like one of those things you start training from a young age. And it's kind of one of those things that a lot of people in the sport like fear and like going into like different breath control workouts like people get really nervous about. And honestly, being out of the pool for this long with the quarantine, I'm like pretty nervous to get back into that because it's so like it can be, I don't know, it's like definitely a mental game at the same time as physical, so it's hard.
Now I'm sure you get this all the time, but I'm still going to ask the question: how long can you hold your breath for?
I knew it. Okay, I honestly don't know. Like, I really need to just sit here and hold my breath one day because I think every person I talk to asks me. But I don't know because, like I said, when we're doing our routines, like we're not just like sitting still holding our breath, you know. But we've done like when we do like laps underwater, I think I've gotten to like. We had to see how far you could swim in like a certain amount of time one time. And I got like 3 laps, which is like 75.
Yeah.
Yards. So I'm not sure if I can go further than that. I may be able to go further if it wasn't for time, but I'm not sure.
That's pretty impressive. That is definitely impressive. But okay. So you mentioned like the training right now, obviously with COVID-19 and everything moving, you guys have had to do a lot of training kind of at home, out of water and stuff like that. What have you guys been doing? Like, how have you altered your training during quarantine?
So, yeah, we decided to keep, like, a regular schedule so that we're still, you know, going to bed at a decent hour, waking up early and starting our day off with our workout. So it's definitely not, like, the full 8 hours that we're used to, but we've been doing, I think it was, like, 8 to 12 every day. So about 4 or 5 hours, Monday through Saturday, same schedule. Sundays are our off days. But, of course, like, all of the work on land and like at home by ourselves. So yeah, we tried a lot of different things. At first we were sticking to our normal stuff. So we're doing our gymnastics strength with our coach online and then our ballet or Pilates. And then we would do like our synchro specific stuff. So we have like these headstand things where we like go upside down and we can like practice our legs that we would do in the water, but on land, of course. And yeah, so kind of just trying to adapt at first. And then once we realized everything was pushed back like a whole year, we realized that we weren't going to have to come out of this and go right to a competition. So it was a little bit less stressful and a little bit more open to let's try new things. Let's make new connections. So we did like we started with just training with another national team, an artistic swimming national team. And then it turned into a whole like Pan American workout. So all the Pan American countries, we like came together every Friday and would do a workout led by a different country each week. And then we went to Team USA Sports. So we started it and led like a stretching session for any other Team USA athletes who wanted to join. So people from all different sports, I think wrestling, boxing, I think there was some track and field there. I don't know, a bunch of different sports. And so that was cool. And then we went to like a whole world workout for artistic swimming. And then yeah, so we just made like tons of new connections and really tried to take the best of like the situation we're in and take advantage of this whole Zoom thing that everyone's been getting into. And yeah, so it's been, our coaches have definitely kept it interesting for us and been able to help keep us motivated too, because I know a lot of athletes have struggled just kind of with motivation during this time. So I think our team's been really lucky with that.
Now, I'd read, I believe it was in one of the world trainings, that like each country would kind of teach something a different day. And you actually taught everyone a TikTok dance. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was for the, I think that was for the first Pan American workout. Yeah. So we went like country by country and led something. And our team was like, especially being like high school age, just graduated age, super into TikTok and got me into it during this quarantine time. So we were like trying to think of something. We're like, okay, we don't want to just say like, okay, let's do 20 push-ups. Like, let's try and do something a little bit more exciting. So that morning, I think our team like sent out a TikTok. I was like, all right, I'll learn it real quick. So I like learned it real quick. And that's what I taught. So yeah, that was fun.
That's awesome. So, I mean, with that, like with you being the vet and everything, all the discussions that you're having with everyone is over Zoom. Like it's, you're, nothing's face to face. How are you still kind of being that leader on the team via social distancing and Zoom?
I think like just kind of leading by example and, you know, with the way I'm working or the things I say or the way I respond to things, but our team's really taken like an approach of not having like, yes, I'm the returning veteran, but we don't really have a team captain. We don't really have one person who's like the leader and other people aren't. It's really cool. We've found like everyone's strengths and everyone's different personalities and everything, and kind of given ourselves roles for the team. And so we kind of all have our own place to lead. And so I think that's really cool and special in our team. So just kind of doing the normal stuff that I would do in training too, and just making sure that the team stays connected. So we're still talking in the group chat. We'll have like FaceTimes every now and then, just like outside of practice, just like a normal locker room chat, as our coaches call it, and just to catch up and everything like that. So yeah, just kind of making sure everyone's okay, checking in on everyone and seeing if anyone needs to talk or things like that. So yeah.
Your team also works with a sports psychologist like throughout the year. What has been kind of the message to you guys during this time?
I think like what we've tried to make our like team motto kind of during all of this is just to what I said before of like making the most of the situation. So not focusing on kind of what we're missing out on or what we may be losing during this time in terms of like our skills in the pool and things like that, but focusing on kind of what we can gain and what we can actually, how we can grow during this whole situation. And I think we really did a great job of that. Like I said, with all the different connections we made and everything, and keeping a positive attitude as much as we could through all of it, and waking up every morning and keeping each other motivated and everything like that. So really just trying to stay positive and make the most of the situation. So don't end this quarantine, this whole however month period we had, and feel like we just wasted time. Like actually feel like we got something out of it. And I think we did. So we're pretty happy about that.
What kind of ways do you think this quarantine might end up like benefiting you? Like what ways do you think you might have gotten stronger when you get in the pool? Like certain things might be even potentially easier.
Actually, I think my core has gotten a lot stronger. I've like done less focus on kind of flexibility in my back and more focus on my core a bit. And we've been doing these daily, like 30 minute, like intense core workouts that, Bill May, who's like our male synchronized swimmer, he works in Cirque du Soleil in Vegas in the shows. He's been running them on Zoom. So we join like every day for those. And, I feel different. So I'm like excited to get back in the pool and kind of see like if I feel any different. And I think also just like mentally, just kind of like learning more about myself and like what I need during, I don't know, training and all these different things. So kind of knowing like, yeah, just what I need to train mentally and recovery wise and things like that, kind of preparing for another year. So it gave me like time to kind of step back and take a break and just understand myself a little bit more too. So it's been cool.
Now, there had been talk about potentially like post Tokyo Olympics of you potentially retiring. What kind of thought have you given to that, if any at all?
I was planning to keep going after Tokyo. So actually with like the postponement, it didn't change too much. We have world championships every 2 years. So it would be supposed to be in 2021. So I was planning to continue another year anyways of kind of still going out at full-time training. So yeah, with the postponement, like I said before, we're excited our team has more time, and of course it changes plans up a bit, but for me, didn't change too much. I've talked to some other athletes who, you know, were really just pushing, like trying to make it through one more year, and other people who are, you know, yeah, at like the end of their career. So I know I'm pretty lucky with my age and the way my body's still holding up and everything like that. So, just kind of pushing everything back another year. So they postponed our world championships to 2022 actually now. So it'll be a year later again.
Now, we talked about you're only 23, but there's already people talking about like, oh, well, you might retire, like stuff like that. I mean, at 23 years old, is synchro or artistic swimming similar to kind of like gymnastics in a way where people start at a really young age and kind of retire at a really young age?
It's getting later and later. It really depends on where you are in the world. People will be, you know, competing up until their late 30s. People will kind of like take a step back, have their families, have kids, and then come back into the sport. Some of the best in the world right now have had kids and come back. So really it all depends on your body, on what you can take. And of course, if you can like support yourself through it, we're not making millions here. So it's not that easy. And especially with the amount of training that goes into it, we can't really have a full-time job and train at the same time. So I'm trying to find that balance and, just keep growing our sport, also getting the sport more known so we can eventually get more sponsors, things like that. So it can be more of a job in a way. But yeah, so it kind of depends. In the US, people tend to retire from like national team training earlier because they'll go and compete collegiately.
Okay.
But yeah, other places in Europe, things like that, they'll go on for longer. So we'll just see where my body takes me and how long I can continue training and stuff and go from there, just year by year right now.
Absolutely. And I mean, so in various different sports, like so many athletes will have like different superstitions going into their competitions, whatever that may be. What kind of superstitions do you have going into your competitions?
I'm not too superstitious, and I've tried like not to be too much, just because there are so many things out of our control when we get to competitions that it's like, if something goes off, like it could freak me out, and like then I'm gonna think I'm gonna have bad competition. And so it's like better to just kind of like avoid all of that and just have like little things that I can control. So like for our team, we always like after warm up we'll go and like take a kiss down to the bottom of the pool. So like we'll go down, swim down to the bottom and kiss the bottom of the pool, and if people are already out, we'll like they'll blow us their kisses and we'll like take them down for the team. That's like a cool one that we have with our team that I really like. And that's like obviously something that's in our control. We know we can do that every time. Other than that, my partner from Rio, Maria, had a lot of like different superstitions, and she would always like tell me them, but I try not to get like too involved. Yeah, I don't really have anything else too crazy. I try and stick to like what we've been doing with training in terms of like warm up and what I eat for breakfast and things like that. But yeah, that's about it.
Now, this might not even be a superstition, but I had read that you always yawn with the nose plug in before competition. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, it started when I was younger, like not on purpose. Like it would just always happen. Like before I like walk out, like I'd have to yawn. So then I'd have to like take my nose clip off and like yawn and like re-put it back on. And then I'd always have to like yawn again. So it's one thing that I always like take my nose clip on and off like 50 times before it's like perfect. And then, yeah, Maria and I did that a lot too. And I think it was Apollo Ohno that she read, like talked about that at one point and about how it's like good before competition or something like that. But I just did it like, it just kind of like happened. I didn't mean to, but like I would always like have to yawn and our coach would be like, stop it. Like, you can't be tired. I'm like, no, I'm not tired. It's just like letting out all the bad energy. It's good. So yeah, that still happens to me sometimes. And sometimes if I don't yawn, I'm like trying to like force myself. Like I have to get one yawn in before we go. But yeah, I guess that's about it then.
I'm like fighting back a yawn, like talking about yawning. It's really weird how that works. But I mean, so you obviously, we talked about how much time you spend on the pool deck, in the pool, training on top of classes and stuff like that. What kind of things do you do outside, when you have time, outside of artistic swimming? What kind of things do you do?
Yeah, I mean, right now, don't really have that much. Well, now I guess more time than before, but can't really do much. But normally, it's, I don't know, it depends, because you don't really have that much time to do any outside activities. Or even if I do have time, most of the time I won't have energy to. So it's like focusing on recovery, and, you know, we'll go home and it doesn't really end there. You have to focus on, of course, recovery, nutrition, things like that. But then also we'll have to like review video before and make corrections before the next practice. So, it's definitely like a lot outside of the pool too. But I don't know, I've gotten more into like, I like hikes and like hanging out with friends and things like that. Or like the Bay Area is like super cool area. So just kind of like, I've been here for a while now and I feel like I still haven't seen like anything. So trying to like explore more around the area. Nothing like, I don't have any like crazy hobbies. I've gotten into cooking during quarantine, which I feel like everyone has, which I've always liked, but I feel like I never have like the time or energy. So I just like put something together really quick to eat. But that's about it, I guess.
Now, you're also a RISE mentor. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and why that was something you decided you wanted to do?
Yeah, so the RISE program is founded by two swimmers, and it's basically one-on-one mentors mentoring youth athletes, so middle school, high school athletes. And you work one-on-one. It's just you have Skype calls with them and you go through a curriculum, basically. Kind of working on those mental skills. So that's one thing that I wish I had kind of focused on more as a young athlete. You know, it's not all about just like being the best athlete you can, like physically, and like have to be strong and like have to have the endurance and all of this, but it's also like putting in the reps in your mind. So focusing on the mental side of it too is really important, and especially in the sport, well, in any sport, I guess. But when I got in contact with them, I loved the whole idea of the program and everything about it, and just wanted to be a part of it. And it's something that I can do while I'm training, and it's something that I can have as I'm transitioning out of sport into post-sport career, whatever I want to do. And even if I wanted to continue it after that, I could. So it's kind of like, it's a way of, it'll be something that I have to do outside of training, but then it'll also be a way of giving back to kind of sport and to youth athletes, and kind of giving them what I wish I had had when I was growing up. So it's a really great program, and happy to be a part of it.
And lastly, before I let you go, like, what would you say is the biggest misconception about synchronized or artistic swimming?
I guess it would just be like that people think it's like still like flower caps and like walking on the bottom, like spinning in a circle, like spinning out water. I think it's like, it's getting a little bit past that. People know, well, most people will know it's not that anymore. That's like probably the main thing, like just not understanding how much the sport has evolved and grown over the years, and how much like training it actually takes. Like, we don't just show up to the pool and train for 1 hour and then kind of like go on with our lives. Like, it's actually like full-time job or even more. So, and we're not getting paid like a full-time job or more. So, I think just everything that goes into it, and all the cross training and the hours, really the time that goes into it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. And I cannot wait to now have a big vested interest in artistic swimming in the future, and see what happens in the upcoming Olympic Games. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. And thank you for everyone for watching. Thank you everyone for listening. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel or the podcast, make sure you do so that you don't miss an episode. And make sure to also follow us at beyond_theuniform. And don't forget, every athlete has a story. You just have to listen. I'll see you guys next time. This was Beyond the Uniform with TJ Brassel. Join me again next week when triple jump American record holder and two-time Olympic gold medalist Christian Taylor joins the show.